The following message was recorded at the 2012 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the No Regrets Conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Sometimes for questions, and I want to make some disclaimers right up front. There are a lot of smart guys here leading some of these seminars. I'm not one of them. So I have spent as much time as I have to be able to prepare something for today, but I have no idea where you guys are at and what you're expecting. You know, we write these little descriptions of the class, and I wrote that, or of the breakout, I wrote that. But, you know, maybe this is going to change based on our little bit of question and answer prior to that. So I'd like to really hear from you guys first of, you know, what are you expecting? What are you struggling with your own prayer life? What would you like to see out of your prayer life? What are the things you're praying for? Just so that we can have some sort of a context. Then we'll pray. Weird prayer thing. We'll actually pray. And then, you know, we'll see whether I close my computer and we just talk, or whether or not we go back to this outline. So go ahead if anybody has anything. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Got it. Yeah. You're the only one that has that problem. Nobody else in this room does. Anybody else? I do too. You're the only guy that thinks that, though. So far, these are things that we'll talk about. Yes, Chris.
One of my aunts really instilled in me a love to pray, but.
Yeah.
I know it's my chance to look at God in a relationship with him.
Yeah. Bible talks about that, praying the same things. And sometimes, I'll be honest, that's, it talks about it in a way not to do it. But I think that that's largely misinterpreted. Like, if it's the same thing, is that a vain repetition? That's the language of the Bible. That's a great question. Yes, sir. Yeah.
And the hard thing about that is we're so thinking in our mind, okay, I'm going to pray for this and this and that.
Yeah.
But the other part of that is we still know that I have God.
And wait a second. I just want to make sure. Are you saying we're actually going to listen to God in prayer as well? You're not suggesting that. Because this class is not going to get that crazy. How do we listen? Man, these are great.
What should I pray for?
What should I pray for? Did any of you guys read the description of this class?
Yes.
Did that have any effect on why you came? Okay. Was there any other questions? These are great. We can do this the whole time. Praying Scripture. What's up with that? What's my time? When am I supposed to be done? Okay.
But so if it's
11:15 or so. All right. Does that sound like something that's a good for us to start? And here's the other deal. As we're going along, we get to some part where, A, especially if you think what I just said is just dead wrong, somebody throw something or stand up and say, hey, Perry, that's wrong. That's cool. I'm absolutely for that. I mean, I pray one thing more than anything else when I speak in a group like this. It's that, not necessarily that I even know myself, but that I just don't ever say anything that's wrong. That anything that comes out of my mouth is something that if God were standing right here, he would be like, that's right. That's right. So if you hear anything, or if you just have a question like, hey, that just reminds me, here's my deal. You know, I'd like to hear that during it rather than, because a lot of times we'll forget it. Or if there was something that came up in the conversation that made you, that stimulated you to think of it, that's when we want to deal with it. So, this is not going to be, because like I said in the beginning, I'm not a smart guy. I'm not an educated, especially not an educated formally guy. So this isn't going to be like some sort of a deal where I've gone to the prayer college, then the prayer master school, and then I got my prayer PhD. It's more like I'm just a guy and I deal with all of the same crap that most guys deal with. And over time, I've seen a difference in my prayer life. So I apologize if that disappoints you, and if anybody wants to leave because of that, that's absolutely okay. Honestly, it is. But that's the perspective that we're going to come from. Secondly, before I left this morning, my wife and I are having a cup of coffee at about 5:30, which is our normal routine. And we're sitting down. It's kind of a neat deal. I come down, make the coffee, get the fire going, sit down, drink half the pot, and then she comes down at about 5:30. And I'm not allowed to even look at her or talk to her for the first 2 minutes or so. And then I look at her and she says, what? But then she asked me, you know, how did everything go? And I said, you know, it went pretty good. I feel pretty good about everything because I had been up, you know, just kind of repolishing what I'd been working on over the last couple weeks. And she said, can I just say something? And that always perks my ears up because that means she has something to say. And she says, just make sure those guys know that as they pray, especially as they pray out loud, if they get freaked out by that because they've heard other people pray out loud and their prayers don't sound like the other people that they hear praying, that that's okay. So that's not from me. That's a word from my wife. I'm guessing there might be somebody in here that needed to hear that today. So, there are three things, and I'll maybe write them down on this side, and we'll talk about all three of them in detail. But like I said, in my own life, there are three things that I believe God will use to transform us, to change us into more powerful, more effective, more fervent prayers. And these were the three things that, as I look back in my own life, that I've identified. Number one, stop lying. By the way, I'm a terrible speller, so either correct me or just laugh at me or whatever you want to do there. Lying? Yeah. Make sure, because my spell check, yeah, that's okay. Number two, read the Word. And number three, this is where it gets a little bit hairy. Start living a new story. Now, believe it or not, like I say, this is about prayer. And this isn't about, you know, a theory on prayer. This is just my own practical application of how it has worked for me. So these three things are not like a magic formula. They're not a to-do list or any of that kind of stuff. These are not three things to guarantee. You don't see a title up here that says guaranteed to make your prayer life better. They're just three things. I look back in my life and I say, those were three significant things that changed. And for a bunch of this middle part of the conversation, we're actually not going to mention prayer all that much. But hang in there because I haven't lost my focus. It really is still about prayer. But let me just break the secret to you. I think the secret, if there is one, I know for a fact the thing that was catalytic in my life was it being or becoming a different life. So here I am over here on this side of my life and I'm living whatever kind of a life that is. It wasn't like I said, okay, now I'm going to be a big time prayer. But I did these things. That changed me. At the end, the life I ended up living, I didn't have a choice. Today, I don't have a choice. Praying is not an option. Praying is fundamental. Praying is instinctual. I know I'll be killed, maybe even literally, if I don't pray. But I know for sure I'll wither. I know I'll pass out. I know I will not be able to make it if I don't pray. And that's because my life changed. And I think that that's the way for this thing again, because I have the freedom of it not being the way that you're supposed to do it, just the freedom of saying, this is what happened to me. And prayer changed as a result. So all of these things are my part. So that will be the title there. Because here's the way that it works as I understand it. The God that we worship is involved. He was involved from the very beginning. He stays involved through all of what you read in the Bible. He will be involved at the very end. And we get a choice whether or not we want to be involved as well. So he gives us a part because he's not interested in doing this by himself. He could. He did forever before any of us were around, before he created us. But there is another part we have to make sure that we recognize. It's the big part, and it's God's part. So those are the things that he used in my life as the catalytic thing that made the change for me. He could use anything else in your life. So again, it's not the to-do list. But the way that this works, this God's part, our part, I want to give you an example of it so that you can understand it. Maybe you probably all better understand it than I do, but here's the way that I was able to eventually understand this. So the God's part and our part, what is it that I'm supposed to do? Wait here and say, okay, God, do your part? Or do I start doing something? And then does God do something? And is there some kind of a change that happens? And I think it's more like that. So let's just say that I wanted to have big muscles, right? God's involved in that, believe it or not. So the way that it works is, my part would be what in big muscles? It would be going to the gym. It would be doing all of the exercise. It would be making sure that I understood what exercises were healthy for me and which ones exercised which muscles. It would be eating the right food. It would be getting enough rest. It would be drinking enough fluids. It would be all of those kinds of things. But that in and of itself isn't going to do anything. God wrote some sort of a genetic code on these things called cells. Inside each one of these cells, there's about 40 machines, and there's probably more than that. That's just all of the microscope power that we have that we can see. I go to the gym, I break the machines that are inside each of the cells. When I go to sleep, God fixes all of the machines, makes them stronger, says, now see if you can break that. The next morning, or second day, I go back and I break them, and every time I break them, he repairs them in such a way that over time, my muscles get bigger. I'm doing something to be sure, but if my muscles didn't have that written in their genetic code, they'd never get bigger. So it's kind of like that. God's doing the supernatural part, and it is like out of this world. It's crazy what he does, but we're doing the simple a thing as going to the gym and exercising. So we have to be able to understand all of what we're talking about. So like as an example, like this is where I just gave you a bunch of my language, but now let me give you some of God's language. Romans 12:1. Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. That's what God is saying. He's telling us, get out there and do your part. Get out there and do the work, which is actually, guess what, to me? Worship. The service and the worship, it's the same word. Your work is you worshiping me. That's giving me the what was Tony talking about? Until you make God number one, he's not going to empower you, right? And that's what this work is. It's proving to God that it's number one. By the way, every single year I've given one of these, there was multiple points where the conversations that I've been having with God in the weeks leading up to this, though I certainly obviously don't have any, like we don't get an outline from Tony Evans and say, yeah, kind of tie this in somewhere. We both have the Unleashed title and that's it. But I've seen that over and over, and I know it happens in the other guys too, and that's pretty neat to me. Jesus, later on, earlier than what's written there in Romans, is very, very specific on the same exact thing. When he is talking in John 4:34, he says, "The food that keeps me going is that I do the will of the one who sent me." So he's talking about a spiritual food, right? But there is a connection in the physical realm to the spiritual food, even for Jesus. He says, here's how I get strengthened. Here's how I develop. I do this stuff that physically, because that's where he was. He wasn't talking about doing it up in heaven when he was up in heaven, because he was there before he came down earth. He was talking about doing it right down here on earth. So, now we have an understanding, at least on some level, what it is that's going to take place. We have a part. God has a part. And so here's both the good news and the bad news. The reality is, for all of us, or we wouldn't be in this group, we're not going to do it. This is where the game plan falls apart. Because this is work. It's just like going to the gym. It's just like disciplining yourself on a diet, on what you can eat or what you should eat and what you don't eat. It's just like disciplining yourself in a whole bunch of other places of your life that we're not even going to talk about. But it is hard work. And the reason that we don't do it, if we're honest with ourselves, and maybe this would be a day that we could really start to be honest with ourselves, is that we don't think it's worth it. And there's two it's in that. We don't think it, the difficult physical exercise, is worth it. And what is it? The second it is the new life, the powerful prayer life. But it doesn't matter, because there's another word, a Bible word, that says, even if you don't believe that it's worth it, do it anyway. Right? What's that word? That's faith. Right. So, question is it acceptable? Because here's what a leader does. A leader says, here's where we are. Here's where we want to be. Explains why where we are is completely unacceptable. Explains why where we would be awesome. And then about two-thirds of the way there, he says, you can finish. Because right after we leave, we won't worry. We'll still be excited about the new program. Just before we get there, I mean, like when we're inside of it, we'll be like, okay, I can do it, I can see it. But right here, and maybe that's where some of us are, right here in the middle, somewhere in the middle is where we kind of run out of gas. And so that's where we can go into the narrative and pick up some momentum. But let's look a little bit closer at what our part is. So I said, I stopped lying. I recognized in my own life that I had been lying to God. God would ask me this question. He would ask me at the oddest times. He would ask me when I was not expecting it. I never heard an audible voice. I never saw a burning bush with an envelope that said Perry, and I picked up the envelope and said, "Dear Perry, this is what I want you to know," or "this is what I want you to answer." But yet, I knew he was asking me this question, and he kept saying to me, "Is this all you're going to give me?" I was a Christian for years and years. I mean, I got saved when I was 6 years old. Backseat of my mom and dad's car on the way home, or after a Sunday evening service, the Friday before, at 6 years old, I spent the whole afternoon on the playground cussing everybody out. I found a guy that knew how to cuss, and I just hung with him, and we swore at everybody. I got home, and I thought I was going to hell, for sure. Saturday came and went. I didn't go to hell. Sunday, I went to church. I'm thinking, I'm definitely going to get burned, or something's going to bad happen. I got out of church, and I said to my dad, "I can't take this. I can't live like this. What's going on?" I was cussing at people all day long in the playground. He said, "I know what's going on." We prayed. I got saved. 6 years old. That's a long time ago, in case you're wondering. But yet, that for many of those years, I would be like, yeah. He would ask me that question, "Is this all you're going to give me?" And I would say, what? What would anybody say when God asks you that question? What? Doing the best I can? What do you want? The question is this really all you're going to give me? Yeah, right. You're liar just like me, because that's what I did. I would lie. I would say, no, absolutely not. Tomorrow morning, I'm giving you the full deal. I would lie to God. Right? That was my deal. Now, that wasn't my deal for a week. That wasn't my deal for a month or a year. For me, okay, guys, and if you want me to leave after this, I can. That was my deal for about 20 years. That was my deal. I was here at church during many of those 20 years. I can show you where the seat was kind of worn out from me sitting up in the balcony. I would lie. I would go out on an elk hunting trip. I'd be laying on some mountain somewhere in Idaho or Colorado or Montana by myself, nobody within 100 miles of me. I'd be laying there, and I'd be thinking, man, this is awesome. Tomorrow I'm going to kill a big bull. Is that really all you're going to give me? And I'm just like, no, as soon as I get home from this trip, I'm telling you, man, I'm just all in. Right? And my wife, it's funny because my wife would say to me the day that I got back, her favorite day of the whole year was the day or two after I got back from a hunting trip or anything like that. God would talk to me while I was there. I would come back and I would start to do a little bit of this and I'd blow it off. It's sad. I mean, I want you to understand, my personality is such that I can kind of make light of things, but I'm not making light of this. And I promise you, eventually when it caught up to me, there was a time in my life where I was convinced I would never smile again. For sure, never laugh again. I can remember going out on runs, just sobbing, crying. And it's weird, like when you're sweating and crying at the same time and you don't know what is what. You know, I was thankful for that because I'm like, what would people think if they see me just crying when I'm running? But that's the way that it was. So I eventually, though, God does pursue us. You know the 23rd Psalm, right? It gets to that part where surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. Well, goodness and mercy is who in the Psalm, right? That's God. Follow me all the days of my life. That word follow is actually more like pursue, the way that a dog that is trained to hunt a rabbit or something like that, a hound, chases after. That's what the word is. That's the way that it is with God. And he does not get tired before we do. So eventually, I did stop lying. I stopped doing the things that I said, you know you're not supposed to do these things. And I started doing the things that I knew I was supposed to do. I'd read the Bible. I'd been in church for my whole life. Wasn't that difficult, but it was just a decision that I had to make. Let me find my place again. Let's talk about why, for years, that 20-year period, potentially, I didn't do it. Three reasons again. I don't know if you guys will be able to see it, but they're all factors. The fun factor, the fear factor, and the fool factor. We all sin. We all have idols in our life. And I know that sounds a little bit freaky, especially if we call ourselves or want to call ourselves Christians, but that's the fact. If you're not sure what you're doing that's sinning, if you're not sure what you're doing or what is your idol, just ask yourself this question. What do I really like to do? What's really a lot of fun? Because make no bones about it, sinning almost always is fun. Idolatry is a blast. I mean, it just flat out is a gas. Now, I mean, I'm getting kind of like that deer in the headlight look right now back. Like, you can't be saying that because we're in church and sinning is the devil and it's not fun and we hate to do it, right? And none of us actually have any little wooden statues or anything anywhere on my property. You can come look. I got news for you guys. Sinning is fun and you all know it and you all do it and you all spend a bunch of your money on it. And idolatry is the exact same way. So, we can wrap it up. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, like going out and getting some whores, or I'm not talking about, although some of us are doing that. I'm not talking about, you know, going out in downtown Milwaukee and buying some crack and smoking that, or some heroin and shooting it, or swallowing it, or smoking it, or however you want it. I'm not talking about that kind of, course, we don't do that. But there is a bunch of other kind of sinning, and there is a bunch of other kind of idolatry, right? We know that, right? You guys do know that, right? Okay. It's okay. It's safe in here. There are no cameras or anything like that. Your wife is not going to be like, when he asked that question, Okay. So, basically, there was this identification that said, hey, this stuff that I'm doing here, it's a ball, it's fun, okay? And it's kept me from being truthful with God, but I'm not going to let it anymore. I am no longer going to let the fun factor keep me from stopping lying and doing the right thing. The fear factor, we all know what that is, right? Because the word rhymes with fear, it's peer. Right? Every one of us wants to be a member of a club. Some kind of a club. Some of us, like on this side of town, you get to be a member of a country club. Now where I'm from, which is further west than here out in Dousman, we're hillbillies. But that's still a club. I'm a redneck. That's a club. Guess what? We laugh at all the people that are in the country clubs. They laugh at us, right? That's the way that it works. Because here's the way that inclusion works. Inclusion says you're powerful now. You're included. You're a member of a group that all of these other people, they may be in a different group. That's cool. But they're not in my group. And that elevates me. That empowers me. That gives me some sort of a control that I think, okay, now my life isn't quite as bad as I think it is. So in my club, the things that we like to do, it weren't the rob banks and that kind of a thing. In your club, they could be that. And it wasn't pornography. It was just all of the fringy kind of stuff, you know. Instead of having one or two beers, we like to have five or six. Sometimes, I'm not going to lie, it would be eight or ten. Okay? But that's the way that my club operated. And I was thinking, you know what, I got a pretty cool club here. These guys are pretty cool. We can laugh at everybody else that's not in our club. And I like that. I enjoy the power of that. And I'm fearful of what they would say if I would say, hey, I don't think I can do this anymore. Because I know that they would be like, dude, we need your membership card. You're not in the club anymore. You know, pick your club, whatever it is. It could be academics. It could be skateboarding. It could be smoking weed. It could be whatever it is. And there could be a bunch of other stuff in your life that you look at everybody else and say, well, I'm not as bad as that guy. Right? But remember, we're going to stop lying. We're just not going to candy coat anymore. We're going to say it the way that it is. So the fear factor was one of the things. The fool factor, nobody wants to be called a fool. But I am a fool on some days still, and I was consistently a fool back in the day. And here's the reason. This whole lying thing. You know the way that a lie works, right? The lie is where I say to you something that's not true. You may or may not believe it, but I propose it as a truth, but in reality, it's not factual. It's not propositionally true, right? So it would be kind of like somebody would see me and they'd say, hey, I saw you on the job the other day. You work for such and such a company? I'd be like, no, it's actually my company. That's not. But, you know, I'm thinking this guy might be impressed by that if I say that. So, you know, whatever. But here's the equation, the mathematic equation of a lie. In order for me to present a lie to anybody else that they may or may not believe, I have to present a different lie to me and, get this, I have to buy it hook, line, and sinker. I have to be completely fooled by the other lie that I present to myself. So I can't tell any of you a lie before I can tell me a lie and believe it. And this is where you guys are saying, okay, we see the not so smart part right now. Here's the thing. The lie is it would be better for me to tell a lie than a truth. That's the lie I have to tell and believe myself before I can tell anybody else, including God, a lie. And here's the thing about lies. We can choose to do that. God gave us the ability. God always says, though, I'll let you do whatever you want to do. I will not allow you to determine what the consequences of what you do, though, are. So one of the consequences of lying is believing them. And once you start believing one lie, guess what, guys? You cannot identify other lies as easily. Because guess what you are? A liar. And a fool. So, I decided that these three things, as I look back at them, were pretty significant things that kept me from just getting past step number one. The fun factor, the fear factor, and the fool factor. As I look back, once I accomplished, or once I got through these, Once I overcame these, once God gave me at His own prompting and with all of the way that He pursued me, once He gave me the energy, I did stop lying. Or, like all of us, I stopped lying for periods of time, and then I would lie again, and then I would recognize, whoa, I'm lying. And then I would say, I don't want to do that, and start over with a new period of time where I just was not lying anymore. So this next thing that we really, I think, for me, and I have no idea, honestly, I don't know what it's like in everybody else's life, but I have seen this consistently in other people's life, but this idea of starting to read the Bible. And not starting to read the Bible maybe the way that I've been reading it in the past. And there are a whole bunch of different ways that you can read the Bible, right? One of the ways that you can read the Bible is go to the parts that you will be able to manipulate so that you can prove to somebody, this is what I use to justify my behavior. That's a great way to read the Bible. That's kind of part of this, though, the fool thing. But it is a way that we read the Bible, right? So we can find out the verses that, especially in our club, work well. And get the amens and the nods and the whatever. And every club, every socioeconomic strata, every social strata, you know, whatever. They've all got their own parts of the Bible. They're like, check it out. Right? Yeah, amen, brother. Right on. Feeling that. But there's another way to read it, and that's more of a little bit comprehensive, where you just basically say to yourself, okay, so the story is that God is hip somewhere, everywhere, however He says it in His story. We're down here, and we kind of think that we're more important than we are, but if we decide that we want to start hearing, finding out from God, like this guy says, like, how is it that I listen? Primarily, because how many have seen the burning bush again in here? Okay, so primarily we have 66 books divided into two different parts, 37 over here on this side and 29 on this side. And that's what God says is His major, at this stage of the game, that's His major revelation, right? As you read the story, there were other times where it was different revelation, different methods of revelation. There were the time of the prophets. But then Paul says, like, right now, we got Jesus. It's different than it was before. And right now, guys, we got the Bible. We got 66 books, 39 on one side, 27 on the other. Based on that math, which side do you think is more important? What? The old. But that's not what you're reading, is it? So, are you guys a bunch of liars or idiots? So here's the deal. We can make that choice to say, there's only 66 books. I don't have any idea what any of this stuff on the 39 or most of it means, but I'm going to read it. And here's what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to read it like it's a math book. I'm not going to read it as though somebody's going to give me a test. And I'll either elevate my status by how well I did on the test, or I'll get into heaven by how well I did in the test. I'm going to read it as though it's a story. Because that, quite frankly, is what it is. It has a bunch of information like formula type stuff, rules and regulations and principles and things like that, that are basically boundaries and principles that if I understand and am willing to be obedient to, would make me healthier. Just like the way I have to understand something about better for me to kind of bulk up on the protein side of my diet rather than the carb side of my diet if I want to see more muscle gain, muscle mass gain, right? So, reading in that way, from one side of the Bible to the other side, and there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can do it, especially today with the internet that we have. Like, as example, reading plants, right? There's hundreds, probably thousands of them. But to just say, okay, so here's the deal. 66 books, right? Takes about 20 minutes a day if you read about 25 days out of the month. Okay, so here's what I want you to ask right now. What, regarding my prayer life, if I'm trying to understand how it is that I communicate with God and how He communicates with me, what better 20 minutes a day, 25 days out of the month, would I have to do something? What better exercise would I do? What more efficient way? Prayer? Yeah, maybe. But problem with starting with prayer is, what do I know about the guy that I'm talking to? How is he going to choose to reveal himself to me so that I can do it? Through my prayer, eventually, I think, and often initially as well. But this is where I think, for the most part, this question does get answered. How do we listen? By what God has already said, made clear to us in black and white, down on a piece of paper, in about 47 different translations that all of us have that fast access to. So for me, that's my deal. I said, I get up, I make a fire, I have a cup of coffee, and then about an hour later my wife comes down. Guess what I'm doing during that time? 6 days a week. I take one day off. 6 days a week, I'm reading the Bible. It allows me to read through the whole Bible every year. I decided about 10 years ago there was no better use of the first 20 minutes of my day. Period. And I didn't know any of this stuff when I started reading it, but remember, God has a part. He will. He has written something actually in our spiritual code, because we're not just made up of dirt. This, all this is dirt. Because he reached down and he grabbed the dirt and he formed it, but there was no life in it, and he breathed into it. What did he breathe into it? Tells us in John. God is spirit and truth and must be worshipped in spirit and truth, and we're made in his image. So guess what? We're spirit too. We're dirt and we're spirit. And I strengthen my spirit every day by doing my stupid part, the reading, for 20 minutes, but God does some cosmic tractor beam thing that just blows me away. Let me put this in Eugene Peterson's language. He's a great wordsmith. Because reading is not just enough. We have to read, then live. Because it's only 20 minutes. And I go to work every day, right? And I hang out with my friends every day. So I got way more time to do a bunch of other stuff than read, that I actually have to do, that I believe that God wants me to do. And so I read something, and then I say, now as I'm going forward, I'm actually going to live that stuff that I've read. I'm going to figure out how that story fits into my story. Well, quite frankly, the other way around. How my story fits into that story, and I'm going to live it. So it talks about, like, I'm walking down the street, and I got a coat on, and I got a shirt on, and I see this other dude, and he's just got a really light shirt on. And it says, if I have, you know, more than one layer on, and this guy's only got one or no layers on, I'm supposed to shed one and hand it to him. Now I'm just living in that story, right? That's what I'm doing. And here's the benefit of that, as Eugene Peterson puts it. One of the many welcome consequences in learning to read our lives into the lives of Abraham and Sarah, Moses and Miriam, Hannah and Samuel, Ruth and David, Isaiah and Esther, Mary and Martha, Peter and Paul, is a sense of affirmation and freedom. We don't have to fit into prefabricated moral or mental or religious boxes before we are admitted into the company of God. We are taken seriously just as we are and given a place in His story. For it is, after all, His story. None of us is the leading story of our life. By the way, that's out of a book called Eat This Book, A Conversation in the Art of Spiritual Reading. I would highly recommend that. They asked us for a list of any materials that we might quote, and they promised us that they would be in the bookstore. So, Eugene Peterson, Eat This Book. So here's the next thing. We've got to be able to develop, you can call it whatever rule that you want to call it. I'm looking at 2 clocks, and that one's not actually right, is it? Okay. Teddy Williams. Who's Teddy Williams?
Baseball player.
Was he good batter or bad batter?
The best.
What's his lifetime batting average?
406.
For what?
406.
Just over 400. That means about 60% of the time Teddy got it wrong, about 40% of the time he got it right, and he's the best there ever was in Major League Baseball. Now, this may be a little bit of a stretch of a metaphor, you guys, but which do you think is tougher, reading the Bible and understanding it, or hitting Major League pitching? Okay, so you're going to, don't use it as a 40-60 rule. Call it a 50-50, call it an 80-20, but have some kind of a rule that says, I'm going to, there's a little bit of a curveball in some of this, I'm going to get it wrong. In other words, don't be dogmatic, because here's what's going to happen if you're at all like me. Check it out, man. I'm reading the Bible every day. But midway through the second year, I'm like, man, I'm really got it going on. Everything that I read, I understand perfectly in my mind, right? That's not, you know what that turns you into? Almost immediately, a hypocrite. Who's the hardest group of people that Jesus was in the Bible? The hypocrites. It's the actors. It's the guy that act like they're batting 1,000 when they're not even batting 400. So don't get sucked into that. Read it. Get it right. You'll get a bunch of it right because it's not just you getting it right. It's God getting it right for you. But understand for sure. I mean, here's one of the things. I eventually got to one point where I'm like, you know what? I know some of what went on like 6,000 years ago, because I'm like a pure creation guy. I'm not like the other kind, whatever. But if you were, and I'm not a big deal, you know. So if it was million years or 6,000 years ago, it doesn't matter to me. And I know some other stuff that happened about 2,000 years ago when Jesus was here. And I kind of know what's been going on since like about the 40s, 50s, or thereabout of, you know, the century before. I have no idea what went on in that period of time, roughly from about the end of the first century all the way through almost current times, especially as it relates, I'm talking about, with church history. So I started reading about church history. And you know when you're in church and some guy will say, well, you know, Augustine says blah, 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 and you listen to it, it's like, wow, that dude had it going on. And then, you know, he says, Origen said blah, 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 and it's like, wow, those guys could really think. And, you know, John Calvin said, you know, and Martin Luther said, right? And you listen to all of these guys, right? And they were just incredible thinkers and blessed men, anointed men. Guess what? Go and do some study on any of them. They were equally jacked up to us. Luther didn't think James should be in the Bible. Got that one wrong, Marty. So, that's the idea, is to remember that you're going to get a bunch of stuff right. God will make sure of that. But at the same time, just hang on a little bit loosely to some of your theology or some of your thinking, because if you don't, you will elevate yourself, you will act as though you are smarter than you are, and that's not good in God's economy. So, now we get back to prayer. Like I said, it seems like we haven't talked too much about prayer, but my concept, as I said from the beginning, when we start doing this, when we start living a new story, because that's the way, as I said, that the Bible has been presented. It's been presented as a story. Our default story is that we're the center of the universe. We apply something that a god or any god or several gods, however you want to look at it, would benefit us to our life. It's the big picture. It's the meta-narrative because we are, again, the center of the universe. If you don't believe me, look at a two-year-old. They're definitely the center of the universe. They weren't taught that. That's just their default story. And depending on how that two-year-old is treated, it continues to grow. Look at a 16-year-old girl. Full head of steam. Look at an 18-year-old boy. They're the center of the universe. Who's the smartest guy in the world to an 8-year-old guy? Himself. Who's the dumbest guy? His dad. Come back and talk to that guy, right? Come back and talk to that guy when he's got his 18-year-old kid. He doesn't believe that same thing anymore. No matter what. So, the story actually is the other way around. God's got the big story. We look at it and we say, now where in the world would I possibly fit into that story? I read the narrative and I see how Aaron fit into the story. I see how Moses fit into the story. I see how Paul fit into the story. I see how all these guys fit into the story. And I start living. I can identify with some of them and I start living the way that they're living. I stop believing the lie. Paul was believing a lie at one point, right? He was trying to kill all of the same guys that he eventually would give his own life for. Right? So Paul figured it out. It isn't my story. It's God's story, and I've been run amok of it. I'm going to stop lying to myself. I'm going to start. He got the advantage of, hey, Paul, it's Jesus. But he still does that through the Word. He does. For sure he does. So here's where you end up finding yourself. You find yourself the exact same position as Paul if you live the story. This is scary stuff. It's real stuff, but I promise you, this will happen to each and every one of you guys. Your lives will be destroyed. That may not sound like necessarily good news, but it will be it will be good news, and it also will be true. Your life will be destroyed. Do you ever wonder, Paul, as he writes this, afflicted in every way but not crushed, perplexed but not driven to despair, persecuted but not forsaken, struck down but not destroyed. He's writing in 2 Corinthians, right? And he's telling them, here's my life. Here's what I'm going through right now. Look at the words that he uses again. He is perplexed, he is persecuted, he is struck down, and he is afflicted. Okay, so now, just freeze frame that and picture yourself living that kind of life and not praying. You won't make it. You know you won't make it. Here's one of the things that we got to remember, though. That's not generally a to Z process. It goes from here's where I am today, doing my own thing, lying to myself, and not being an effective prayer. I'm not going to go all the way over here to Z where Paul was when he wrote that to the 2 Corinthians, probably in one day. It will happen over time, and so my prayer life will develop over time. As each one of the things that I am willing to do in the story that seemed ridiculous to me, and some of them really are ridiculous, right? But as I get to that, I become some of those same things. I am perplexed, you know? But yet I still know a little bit of what to do, and I just keep going forward. And so, like, for me, here I am, the white, western Waukesha County redneck, and guess where I work? 26th and Capitol. Guess how many, besides the guy in the green sweater right there who happens to live there, guess how many other white guys are in that neighborhood that see me? Guess how many of the other guys that live in that neighborhood that see me really dig seeing me? What do you think it looks like when I drive my red and white 1997 Ford diesel pickup truck down the road east on Capitol? I get a lot of these looks like this right here. What? And they're not adoring looks. Okay? So, but here's the deal. It really wasn't my choice. I just had to decide whether I was going to lie or not, whether I was really going to stay obedient or not. That was where God ended up taking me to go. And I needed to be about an hour away because I've got to pray the whole way there every morning. And that's no joke. I remember getting in my truck the first morning that I started. It was on March 1st, 2010. And I'm driving west on or east on Highway 18. And right on top of the highway is this giant yellow ball. Because it was like maybe quarter till 7 or something like that in the morning. The sun is sitting right there. And I'm praying. I'm about 3 blocks from my house and I'm praying, right? I'm just a little bit east of Highway 67. And I'm praying and I'm looking at that sun and I'm like, wow, that's not an accident. That's not an accident that that's there sitting right in front of the road or on top of the road, whatever. And it dawns on me, supposedly, like this is not my idea, but I'm pretty sure this is God saying, you stay in the right relationship to the sun and you're going to be okay. You just make sure that you're in the right relationship to the sun. You keep headed east every morning when that sun is coming up, and I got your back. I need to pray. It's a hard job. There's been other stuff, same kind of a deal, where financial situation, you know, that's not a very good paying job. I mean, it pays me enough. I survive. I'm not complaining at all. But there was a bunch of things that led up to that that I had no idea how my wife and I were going to make it through some of the financial stuff that we made it through. And I even remember saying to her, when it really hit the fan, I said, okay, here's the deal. This is where we get divorced. You know that that's what's happening. That's what's going to happen here. This is the kind of stuff that all of our friends most likely will get divorced from. All we got to do is look around. At least every other one. So if we're going to get divorced, let's do it right now. Before we go through all of this mess. But I don't want to. And it didn't necessarily make it easy at all. But you know what? It made a difference. Because we both now were screaming at God. There were days where I would be screaming, like, I kind of step back, you know, from, or my wife would be screaming because I'm like, man, she's getting a little over the top here. God's going to hit her with a bolt of lightning. But you know what? I saw that and she didn't get hit. And it gave me permission to scream at God because I was supposed to be in control. I was supposed to be the leader and I couldn't. Because everything was out of my control. 5 minutes, is that where we're at? Okay. So in essence, guys, what I'm saying is those stories, the ones that you read about Peter betraying Christ, the ones where you read about John being out in a boat and seeing Jesus cooking fish on the shore, those aren't Peter and John's stories anymore to me. Those are my stories. Those are just as real to me because I have all kinds of stuff in my life where I have done that kind of stuff, where I've like, wow, that's Jesus, I recognize him. Or like, oh, I can't believe that I just walked away from that. What a terrible thing that is. So one of these questions, this one right here, that was a real goosebump one for me because I want to give you, I want to share a short story with you that this is the way praying will become when you stop lying to yourself, when you start reading the Word and you start living a new story. A friend of mine, it's actually a friend of mine's son, who is also a friend of mine, but a guy that I was in the trades with, his son, 30 years old, got a 21 or 22-month-old daughter, about the same age as my granddaughter. Appeared to be a normal girl, but they just recently found out that she has almost no hearing. She's not completely deaf, but she's almost deaf. Devastated them. Just absolutely devastated. We had a prayer group, and we got around them and we prayed on them, and you could see that there was some healing in that. But they're just devastated by it. She's going to have to get fitted for hearing aids. So she goes in, gets fitted for the hearing aids. The doctor puts the hearing aids on, and she's kind of like, what's going on here? But she's looking at her mom. This is a 20-month-old girl. She's looking at her mom. And then her mom says these words to me, to her. It's me, Cece. And that baby's face just lit up. It was like she finally got to hear for real what her mom sounds like. She had been hearing something, some little bit of a muttering. But it wasn't the clear voice of the one that she knew, despite what she could hear, loved her and cared for her. And so they went home, they took the hearing aids out, and she took a nap because it was a long day for that baby. And when she got up, she ran to the hearing aids and handed them to her mom and said, put them back in. She didn't say it in that language, but that's what she was saying. That's the way that it will be in the morning when you wake up. Before I ever get out of my bed, before I hardly have my eyes open, it's like, just tell me. Just tell me. I'll do anything, no matter how dumb it is, no matter how bad I'll look, I'll do it. And if that can happen to this white guy from Western Waukesha County who for 20 years was so dumb that he was lying to God, it can certainly happen to anybody. I'll get time probably for a couple more questions if there are any. Otherwise, I want to make sure that we do have some time to pray. Let's pray. Father, I just thank you for every man in this room. I thank you for the courage that you gave them to come here. I thank you, God, for the words that you spoke to them through me. I thank you for the promises that you have given us in your word. God, I pray these things for these men, for each of these men in this room, that if the things that held me back in my life are holding them back, I pray, God, that today would be the day that they would become unleashed, the way that Tony and the way that Steve had been talking about, that they would let go of the lies, that they wouldn't let fear stop them, they wouldn't let fun stop them, and they wouldn't let their foolishness stop them. I pray, God, that they would commit to stop lying. I pray, God, that you would do for them the thing that you've done for me. Give them an incredible hunger for your word. Jesus, just draw them into the story so that they can see where they fit in the story. And God, lastly, I just beg you, let these men live out of that story. Let them live the new life that you've promised each and every one of us. God, this world is broken and I can't believe that, but we are your fix for it. Through your name and through your power, Jesus, I ask these things. Amen. Thanks, guys. Right on Utica Road.
I live in Delphi. Still.
Still same.